greetings and a bodaciously delicious hello to you from the recently riot-torn Vancouver, where the action never stops even as we change our socks. And there's been some action recently. On 15th of June, the local hockey team, the Vancouver Canucks, lost the Stanley Cup final to the Boston Bruins. And rising to the occasion, some dodgy folks turned the event into a full-blown riot. It seemed, well, it was the 1994 riot all over again. So by the end of the riot, I think two people died, dozens were in hospital, and there was multi-million dollars of property damage. So now the police, using facial recognition software borrowed from ICBC, the insurance company, started picking out the ringleaders. So far over 100 arrests have been made. Some of them have already been charged. And as I've heard it, that's a interesting part. This is fascinating. Four ringleaders are suing the police and the city of Vancouver for harassment and invasion on their personal liberty. That's sweet. They gave themselves the right to smash shop windows, some Starbucks, and the local blends were totally gutted, literally. And they smashed the windows on one of the banks, the bay, and they just went inside and started looting the shops, pocketing whatever they could pocket and throw out the rest of the stuff to the rest of the crowd. And these people are complaining that the police were invading on their personal liberty. Well, that's sweet. Maybe a good beating would have been in order, but well, I suppose the police were too soft on them. I suppose the police are too busy beating up innocent paper boys and coming down a bit too harsh on innocent immigrants. But when it comes to clashing with angry crowd, the police are not exactly on the top of their work. But hey, maybe down the road they will improve. Anyway, this is Tom bringing you the June 2011 issue of Tomicide Solutions, fiendishly entitled Three Potential Objections Against Cold Calling to Sell Premium IT Solutions. And I know you are probably busier than a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest, but hopefully you can find some time to review it and just filter it out and take whatever you think would contribute to your business and toss the rest rather unceremoniously. So let's get started. As you probably know, Carl Lewis has been one of the greatest athletes in US sports history. During his career, he won 9 Olympic gold medals and 8 World Championship gold medals. He became an athletic icon. But this iconic status got somewhat shattered when in 1987 he decided to get into music and created the pop masterpiece Break It Up. Rightly or wrongly, many of his fans started ridiculing Carl for his musical act. So what does this have to do with cold calling? Well, just as Carl's brave act alienated him from lots of his fans, cold calling alienates sellers from their target markets. Today, in the age of suspicion and skepticism, cold calling is regarded as a form of harassment. Buyers rightfully believe they have the right to buy whenever they are ready to buy, not when sellers need money. And buyers raise massive wars, well, peddler folders to keep peddlers outside of their operations. And what do sellers do? They invent various ways of breaking through these walls and corner buyers into buying something. So here starts the perpetual battle between buyers and sellers. Many sellers, instead of figuring out how to penetrate the market more effectively, how to approach buyers more effectively, they just go at the market like the bull in the china shop, just go at it with force. And of course, buyers are running scared. No, we don't want to do business with this proverbial bull in the china shop. Let's run away. So buyers work hard to keep sellers away, and sellers work hard to penetrate buyers' circle of attention. So far, it seems buyers are winning, but sellers are tenacious and work hard to get to buyers. Especially small IT businesses fall into this trap because most of them are trapped for cash, and the business is more about daily survival and less about strategy growth and long-term prosperity. Many smaller IT operations don't have marketing managers and marketing budgets or marketing programs in place because they cost money. What they have is armies of salespeople on straight commission, and the more advanced ones, small groups of minimum wage people dialing for dollars from dawn to dusk. But there are lots of medium-sized IT companies too that refuse to invest in marketing and hire hordes of peddlers to roam the land in pursuit of new clients. What their owners fail to realize is that while this approach can make some short-term savings and short-term revenue, in the long run it can only hurt their businesses. Trying to save money by skimping on marketing is the same as trying to save time by stopping your watch. It seems to save what you want to save, but realistically, it doesn't. So let's see why running a business without marketing while relying on a bloated sales force and heavy-handed sales tactics to drum up new business may look cheap and enticing on the surface, but can be pretty self-damaging in the long run. So let's see the first cold prospecting problem. It limits your growth potential. There are far too many sales experts out there who give the following advice to their clients when the sales figures start going down. Hire more salespeople on straight commission so it doesn't cost you a penny. Then increase the mandatory number of cold calls they must make, no matter what. Further, for your existing salespeople, shrink their sales territories, reduce their commission percentages, and increase their quotas, and start whipping them harder than ever. Yes, all that, plus, well, some tactics that you could see in the movie Glengarry Glen Ross, if you remember the famous speech by Alec Baldwin. So what does he urge the salespeople to do? He urges them to do more of the same. Can you see the problem? If you have a method that produces poor results, the idea is not to increase the intensity of the same method, but to do something different that produces better results. For many sales managers, increasing sales is all about hiring more salespeople and doing more of the same, but doing it harder and longer. The sad thing is that far too many sales trainers are on the same opinion. For example, they say, you must memorize more closing tricks. Yes, more manipulation. Or, you must ask for the sale more aggressively. If it's all about aggression, why not just beat the shit out of buyers and keep beating them until they sign the purchase order and hand over the money? It's a lot simpler. It takes less time. Or, you must get better at handling objections. Well, That sounds great. Let's attend a seminar on objection handling taught by a serial rapist. After all, serial rapists are real experts at not taking no for an answer. So how does this lunacy play out? If salespeople currently make 50 cold calls a day, then sales managers mandate minimum 100 calls a day. If salespeople currently knock on 20 doors a day, then sales managers increase it to 50 doors a day. They truly believe that doubling their efforts automatically double their results. But now, let's think differently for a moment. Who sells more books? Amazon with a few people and the robust system? Or your local encyclopedia distributor with no system? And the legion of door-to-door peddlers working harder and longer than a Kulak prisoner in a Gulag labor camp? Some people say selling is a numbers game. Some say it's not. I think it depends. Using a dating example, if a guy's goal is to bed as many women as humanly possible, it's a numbers game. But if his goal is to find someone special for the rest of his life, then it's not a numbers game. If you accept anyone with a purse and a wallet as a new client, then it becomes a numbers game. But if your client acquisition is based on your perfect client profile, then it's not a numbers game because you are looking for only perfect clients. Perfect clients as per your definition. And if we start accepting anyone as a new client, then we are in trouble because most of those clients are likely to be rotten clients. And by rotten clients, I mean clients that are way outside of our perfect client profile. They may be good people, they may be perfect clients for others, but they are rotten clients for us based on our very unique perfect client profile. But if selling is a number game, I don't want to go through the numbers one by one. But if selling is a numbers game, I don't want to go through the numbers one by painstakingly one, pounding my fingers numb on the dial pad of a telephone and wearing my feet and shoes out roaming miles of payment every day for the rest of my life. I want to build an automated system through which prospects can come in if they choose to. And they can qualify or disqualify themselves with minimum involvement on my part. And let's stop here for a moment. Pitch-based business development is like hunting. With your sales pitch loaded in your gun, you roam the land all over Hell's Half Acre, chasing prospects who try to run and hide from you. Information or content-based business development is like fishing. You decide what kind of fish you want to catch that matches your taste and put together an attractive and valuable information or content package that is a bait according to the fish you want to catch. If you are after pike, then you bait your hook with some small bait fish. But if you are after carp, you bait your hook with a piece of lightly cooked potato or sweet corn. And then you wait and the fish will come in droves. Also, you've developed a highly duplicable, consistent and predictable system that brings you a steady supply of fish with pretty little effort. The only reason why most people can afford to buy cars today is because they are assembled on automated production lines. If I remember correctly, it takes 43 minutes to put together a Harley Davidson bike. If they were assembled 100% manually, most people couldn't even afford to buy a motorcycle. Well, not even a bicycle. So, how do IT companies expect to stay competitive in an automated world when their response is just increased brawn power? More of the same old, same old. How would they fare in a boat race when their response to making their galley go faster is bringing in more slaves to the oars and whipping them harder than before? Because that's what most IT companies do. Imagine an IT company with 100 employees, each earning an average annual salary of 50 grand. One way of increasing profitability while keeping costs at the same level is by laying off all 100 people and then hiring 50 top-tier talents at an average annual salary of 100,000 bucks. Your costs are still the same, actually less, because managing 100 people is at least 4 times harder than managing 50. But now you have a higher caliber workforce, so you can do higher caliber work at higher fees. So let's look at the calculation for a moment. Manageability of people is the function of the number of members in the group and their relationships with each other. The total number of relationships in a group is basically n times n minus 1 divided by 2. Basically, where n is the number of the group members, that is number of people in the group multiplied by number of people minus 1, and the whole lot divided by 2. So for 50 people, you have 1,225 relationships, and that gives you the complexity of managing that group. For 100 people, twice as many people, you have 4,950 relationships. So as you can see, 100 people is about 4 times as hard to manage as 50 people. So there's a huge difference here. $100,000 professionals are not merely twice as good as $50,000 professionals, but several times better. As Bill Gates put it a few years ago at a Microsoft conference, a great lathe operator commands several times the wage of an average lathe operator, but a great software code writer is worth 10,000 times the price of an average software writer. The key to this client acquisition conundrum is to automate the front end of the process and humanize the rear end when the sales lead is about to become a paying client. If a manager's only strategy to increase sales is to call, harass, and piss off more people with his intrusion, then he's in for a very, very bumpy ride, and I can almost guarantee that he will suffer some serious cuts and bruises along the way, because buyers don't tolerate that behavior. So now let's move on to the second cold prospecting problem. It makes you look desperate for business. And the big hairy truth is that no one wants to do business with desperate peddlers. You are chasing people while they are busy running and hiding from you. Just imagine this situation. You are walking on the pavement and about 2 meters away you spot a group of beggars. You know they will harass you for money, and especially if it's dark, they may even give you a good recreational beating to make sure they get what they want. So what do you do? Especially if you live in a country where you have no right to defend yourself, even if your life is in danger, like Canada. You can be done for endangering the life of a miserable thug. I suppose for the sake of your health, wealth, and you take a different route, although if you get too close, they chase you down and wallop the money out of you. These folks are desperate for your money and have nothing to lose. And if you can run away, they hit on someone else. Can you see now how your prospects react when you harass them with your offer? A few years ago, I went to see Robert Kiyosaki in Vancouver. just before the event, there was a woman going around and giving everyone a promotional CD for her multi-level marketing business opportunity. It was interesting to see people's faces. They didn't want to reject her, but were not interested in joining her business either. So they took the CD and later chucked them straight into the rubbish bins. They managed to reject her without hurting her feelings. And she's hoping to receive phone calls from these people, ready to do business with her, ready to join her opportunity. And it's just amazing. So how naive, how wasteful, well, how dumb. So what happens if she follows up with some of those people? Some say not interested, but some will string her along with the typical send me more information stuff. No one wants to join her because they see the desperation on her face and see that in order to succeed in that business after joining, they have to do the same brainless mass prospecting grunt work. This is why network marketing is losing ground pretty quickly, because people realize that it's an uphill struggle. Yes, network marketing companies are making good money, but apparently not from selling their products, but from selling training materials to innocent newbies. It's only fair to say that cold prospecting of any kind undermines your market position and raises suspicion for your business. So, in this new world of ours, skepticism is higher than ever, and trust is lower than a mole's belly button. Have you ever sat down with sellers who had dollar signs flashing in their eyes? Do you still remember the pressure you felt as they tried to push you into a dark corner and separate you from as much of your money as humanly possible? I guess it's happened to all of us at one point. For most people, when they have to invest time, money and energy to reach a goal, the enjoyment of the goal feels a lot better than as if the goal just fell into their laps. Have you noticed that most lottery winners squander their money pretty quickly? The late Jim Rohn used to say that the beauty of becoming a millionaire is that in the process people become better people. Actually, money makes us more of who we are. Money makes a kind person even kinder, but a nasty bastard even nastier. So when we cold call people and offer our services, they don't value it because it was not them who discovered the opportunity. It's something that's fallen from the sky into their laps. But when you put out quality content and you detach yourself from the outcome, the results, which you can't control anyway, then you know you do your best, and in harmony to the nature of the universe, there will be a response, and usually a good one. This may sound a bit woo-woo, but let's think of the many solo IT consultants who operate without salespeople, yet they out-earn many of the large IT companies on a profit per employee basis. There are a good number of IT consultants out there who make seven-figure annual net profits. Not gross revenue, but net profits. And that's important. But there's only a handful of large companies that make that kind of revenue per employee profits. And which IT company is more likely to have a perfect client profile? Yes, IT solo consultants. Since after getting clients, they have to work with those clients, so they do everything in their power to avoid problematic clients. Why is this not a problem in larger IT companies? Because as a salesperson, I don't care about how irritating clients are, since I don't have to talk to them after the contract is signed. Especially salespeople on straight commission don't care. For them, what matters is that they get paid and the tech staff can duke it out with belligerent bastard clients. This is why, on average, some 40% of an IT company's clientele is slowly consuming the profit which the other 20% makes. And about 40% of the clientele is pretty much neutral. And why would IT companies accept less than perfect clients? Because they play the growth at any cost game. And that mantra puts them on a constant money chase. But as Tim Williams puts it in his book, Positioning for Professionals, how professional knowledge firms can differentiate their way to success, this growth at any cost mantra doesn't lead to growth, only to enlargement. Yes, the company gets bigger, but also slower, fatter, and sicker. Sick with excess politics, general sloth, and preponderance of not invented hereism. In my view, in any company, any physical growth in headcount must be linked to intellectual growth. That is, what new capacity does this new person bring to the company? If you already employ a bunch of MCSEs, what would it mean to your company's bottom line to bring in a 10-year veteran CCSP? Now, this is something to consider. You don't necessarily need a full-time web designer or graphics designer on your payroll, as so many IT companies erroneously do. But a full-time CCSP could make a huge difference in the range of projects your company could take on. It could add a new facet to your company's reputation. And that leads us to the third cold prospecting problem. It hurts in more than one way. It is emotionally demoralizing, humiliating, and demeaning to run around, beg, plead, and grovel for business. Once upon a time, a sales expert, Gil Wagner of Honest Selling, had a phrase on his website. Do you know why salespeople sit on the edges of their seats when meeting prospects? And the answer is, so they wouldn't damage their knees as they fall on the ground begging for business. There may be some exaggeration in this statement, but there is a lot of truth as well. Buyers regard cold callers as direct marketing genius. Dan Kennedy calls them uninvited pests and treat them accordingly. So the only way these salespeople can sell anything is by effective begging, pleading, and groveling. I know, in traditional sales, it's called asking for the order, but the effect is the same. Whatever we call it, after all, the only difference between surgery and autopsy is the state of the patient. Alright, maybe slight difference in tools as well. But the fact is that salespeople can ask for the sale until they are blue in the face and broke. But until and unless buyers are ready and willing to buy, they don't buy. They don't buy complex high-ticket solutions because the seller is asking for the order. Yes, some may say good salespeople can sell ice to Eskimos and sand to Bedouins. Yes, they can do it once. Most car salespeople still live by this practice, but have you ever returned to the same salesperson from whom you bought your last car to buy your next car? Probably not. Using cold calling, salespeople can have lots of one-off business, but no repeat and referral business. And while the headache is in the one-off deals, profit is in the repeat and referral business. Look at multi-level marketing, again, the typical industry that is based on systematically harassing friends and family members. And what is the result? The typical MLM distributor makes about $34 a year. That's a great return on alienating friends and family. The interesting thing is, in general, the multi-level marketing industry is called blazingly successful because MLM companies make outrageous amounts of money. But somehow, the attrition of distributors is not considered. Of course, it doesn't have to be considered because they are not employees, they are subcontractors, independent operators. So if they die or go out of business, nobody cares. So cold prospecting is despicable both for people who do it and even more despicable for those to whom it is done. Then what's the logic in doing it? There are lots of books and sales trainers out there who teach salespeople how to scumbag their ways to buyers or at least to purchasing agents, but the problem is that they are still regarded as pest, a common pain in the ass. So how can they expect to be perceived as the peer in this equation? They can't. And at this point, buyers bring out their most powerful pest control tools like send me some information, send me a proposal, prepare a comprehensive PowerPoint presentation, or just contact purchasing and they will deal with you. Man, they will deal with you the way you've never been dealt with, because purchasing agents are experts at dealing with these pests. And spending the whole week at pest control meetings is not going to advance salespeople's career any further. Yes, they can get busy, but that's all. But it's all about being productive, not merely being busy. And the funny thing is, what do you think excessive sales training is designed for? It's designed for companies with armies of peddlers, companies that suffer from chronic lack of brain and finesse and try to compensate for this loss with more brawn and sheer back-breaking grunt work. And the funny thing is that huge chunk of old-fashioned sales training is pure motivation. Imagine there is an explicit need for a seminar to motivate people to actually practice their chosen profession. That's pathetic. I think sales is the only profession on the face of the planet where people need external motivation to get up and go to work and practice their chosen profession. That's amazing. So can you actually become more miserable than that? Well, I find it hard. Former Apple marketer Guy Kawasaki has made this comment about inbound and outbound marketing. Inbound basically create a system that brings you buyers, and outbound that you just brainlessly chase after the market. If you have more money than brains, you should focus on outbound marketing, chasing after prospects. If you have more brains than money, you should focus on inbound marketing, magnetically attracting prospects. Well, you can be the best swordsman in the vicinity, but you are no match against a guided missile. And your company can have a whole army of these proverbial swordsmen and swordswomen. But when they come up against your competitor's marketing machine, they get bulldozed to the ground and there is not a dicky bird they can do about it. Well, nothing. Not even a sizzling sausage. Also, just think about the tremendous amount of motivation that goes hand in hand with traditional sales training. Why? Maybe because salespeople who are freshly trained in traditional manipulative selling must overcome their own emotional trauma and self-hatred from using what they have just learned to trick and deceive their fellow humans to get money from them. Maybe because otherwise honest people have been taught that to stay in business they have to use sleazy, unethical, manipulative techniques, and they simply need motivational lift to go through another day of screwing people out of their money. Imagine two drastically similar situations through which the market can receive and respond to your message. This is a response to cold prospecting. I've never met you. I've never heard of you. I don't know your firm. I don't know what you offer. I don't know how you got in my office or on my phone line, but I don't like it at all. What the hell do you want to sell me? Or the other version, I've read your content, books, articles, blogs, etc. I've seen you speak. I've been receiving your newsletter for over a year. I like your approach. I like what you stand for. When I'm ready to change, I will definitely choose you as our change catalyst, as our external help to implement that, to basically carry out this change. To me, situation number two looks a touch better and friendlier. Yes, it takes a bit more time, but if you understand that in B2B business development, you don't sell when you are ready to sell, but when the buyer is ready to buy. And the buyer has to align many, many factors in his organization to make sure that everything is ready. Okay, now we can sign and authorize the purchase order and get moving. When business's only chance of landing new business is to outsell, outtrick, outpeddle, outgrunt, outbrawn, out cold call, out pavement pound, outdrudge, outlast, and outlock the competitors, then they are doomed and dead, although they may still be kicking. So, how do your salespeople fare in successfully approaching high-level executives? Do they need to cold call, or do they use some more intelligent methods? That's the question here. And that leads us to the conclusion of this oratory masterpiece. Hopefully, you found some valuable point in this amazing vocal torment, and you find something that you can take back to your company and say that, hey, holy shit, we can do this, we can tweak this, we can fiddle around with that. So with that in mind, this is the end, as Jim Morrison used to say, and we continue in July with some luck if I live that long. Until then, you have a great week, you have a great month, and all the best.